Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Yes, indeed. Fionnán Sheehan of the Irish Independent is with us on the line, filling in from John Downing this week. Fionnán, good morning to you and thanks for joining me this morning.
Jerry, John is dropped because, as you point out, Sam Maguire is in Kerry and Liam McCarthy is in Tipperary. So there's no point bringing in John Downing from a losing county like on a historic weekend like this where you have the two presidential candidates. And it's an honour as well, Jerry, to be on in the cradle of democracy that is Kerry, the only county in the country to back five and possibly even six candidates in this presidential election. No other county in the country can boast that at all.
We're like ancient Athens, Fionnán. We're like ancient Athens. Our commitment to democracy is such the same. And I'm seeing it playing out in front of me here this morning with the candidates and their teams coming in, doing the interviews, going out there, meeting the people, pressing the face. The campaign is well and truly underway now. But one person who isn't here this morning is Maria Steen. She never got the chance. What happened?
Yeah, despite the fact that she had the backing of two Kerry TDs, Junior Minister Michael Healy-Rae, who is, of course, supporting Heather Humphreys and I think is endorsing her later on this morning at an event, formerly in Killarney. And then you had Danny Healy-Rae came on board this week after having lunch with Maria Steen and her husband. And that Danny's support was significant because it did put her into the high teens in terms of those 20 names on a nomination paper that she needed.
When it happened, I actually thought when Danny stepped in, I thought she's going to get there. She's going to get it over the line.
Yeah, we were looking at ourselves going, oh, it's definitely game on now. And she was heading towards it. I think we were counting him effectively as number 17 because he had come in after the Independent Ireland four TDs had been in. You had a dozen from about 10 from Pat O'Tobin's kind of caucus that the AN2 leader put together. And then you had a couple of others who came on board, Michael Healy-Rae, and then Marion Harkin followed on from him. So she was going well. You had Senator Audbury McCarthy then subsequently given, he was the last one. Then she was sitting there on 18, and then she was flummoxed. Then there was nobody else coming out. The clock was ticking down to the close of nominations. And any of the available independents who, you know, are unaligned to another candidate or had declared public support for another candidate were not budging. And, you know, it did seem to be, you know, going 90% of the way. There was an argument that maybe a few other Oireachtas members should have put their names forward, but they didn't. There were options. I mean, in terms of in the Dáil, there was still ministers, Sean Kenny, Kevin Boxer Moore, Noel Grealish. None of them were budging. Yeah. Michael Lowry wasn't budging. Barry Heenan, he wasn't budging. They're all the government supporting fellas. If you look at the on the left of the Dáil, they're pretty much all going in behind Maria Steen, so there weren't any options there really. I don't think it was reasonable to expect that people who are backing a candidate who are aligned to a political party were going to break ranks and swing and go in another direction. You were looking at people who aren't backing anybody else. And then the focus very firmly fell on the Shannon. And there were a number of senators there, most notably Senator Michael McDougall, his sidekick, Senator Victor Boyan from Dublin, and Senator Gerard Crockwell, all of whom will be quite close in terms of their association.
Social beliefs and other issues.
And so on. The different sort of backgrounds. Crockwell's kind of more trade union background. That's all fine. But none of them were budging. And ultimately, Maria Steen ran out of time. And there was some surprise with Michael McDougall, given that only 12 months ago, he was sharing a platform with Maria Steen during the course of the family and care referendums, where he put together a group called Lawyers for a No Vote. And Maria Steen had been on that with him. They attended press conferences together, been photographed together. And then she had represented that group on a TV debate with Taoiseach Micheál Martin, where she acquitted herself very well. And ultimately, those referendums were defeated, and Michael McDougall got a lot of the credit for raising very pertinent legal issues in those referendums. So there was some surprise and a lot of chatter about you know, why didn't he back her? Why wouldn't he come on board? Or was it ideological, in the real politic
of it all, behind the scenes, in the rooms where these deals are done, whatever the issue is, was there a suggestion that some of her supporters, or perhaps maybe, and we'll forget the online stuff for a moment, even though that wasn't exactly edifying either, and Gerard Quackle has mentioned that, but that perhaps maybe Pádraig Tobin or others, you know, assumed too much or tried to browbeat people into supporting, and that didn't go down well in some quarters. Would that be unfair to suggest that that might have happened?
I thought Pádraig Tobin did very well to get that block of 12 together. He organised, a caucus to hear from candidates who wanted to go down the Oireachtas route. And you know, effectively, it was no surprise that Maria Steen came through that, given the people who were involved were predominantly Conservatives. But, I mean, he did get a number of other people involved there, such as Paul Gogarty, the former Green Party TD. Like, you couldn't accuse him of being a social Conservative, but no. He was willing to put his name behind somebody because as one of the 234 members of the Oireachtas. Then there are accusations that Pádraig was kind of inflating the numbers a bit too much about where they were at. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, they were within touching distance here. Once Independent Ireland came on board with their four TDs, she was getting very close, probably closer than anybody thought that she would do a couple of weeks ago. Now, there is a criticism that has to be directed firmly at Maria Steen. Why did she leave it so late? She didn't declare until effectively the start of September. It was tricky to get to go down the council route at that stage. As you yourself saw in Kerry, you know, people who effectively lobbied did get greater levels of support there. The councils were by then being blocked off in terms of party whips being imposed. So then she turned late to the kind of the Oireachtas route. And it all seemed a bit too late. I mean, if somebody had serious intent to go for the presidency here and who didn't have a direct nomination because they weren't going to have a party block that they could just pick up and run with like Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin, well, then the campaign should have started an awful lot earlier.
Yeah, indeed. And that is a question. Just a final point on this, and this is much is being made of this online, but again, you have to be wary of the fact that a lot of people are shouting very loud online, might be in a very small minority. Yeah. There's some sort of suggestion that what this shows is that the establishment is in control, inverted commas, that Ireland is a cold house now for anyone with strong traditional Catholic beliefs. Do you buy that?
I think there is a strong argument here that, you know, it was clear that in this election, compared to previous ones, that the political parties were going to try and block off any independence. That diktat that was sent out from Fine Gael headquarters, basically threatening councillors with disciplinary action if they even facilitated a vote, let alone stood back from it. They basically were telling them, you're to vote against any vote being held, you're to vote against any candidate getting their name forward. There's a whip being imposed here. That sent a firm message. And the Fianna Fáil one was a little bit more subtle, but it kind of said the same thing, support our candidate, and that's it. So I think it was clear that as a result of that, the council route was shut off. Then you know, it was difficult enough to get Oireachtas numbers together, given the arithmetic there. So, yeah, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you can't just throw the presidency open here to allow anybody to come along and decide, well, should I fancy running for president? You saw that in with the list of names that were coming into Kerry County Council. There was people who had little or no involvement in politics, social campaigning, public life at all, who suddenly just decided, well, I want to be president, and that's it. Maria Steen was slightly different because she had been involved in public life. She had been involved in previous political campaigns as referenda are. And that, I suppose, is what has left a sour taste for her campaigners who are basically saying, look, right, Ireland went through dramatic liberal transformational change in the past decade, but on each occasion there was a good solid block of a third of people who voted no, and that they are not now being represented. The alternative argument could be, well, look, if Maria Steen wants to represent people, there was a European election, a local election, a Dáil election, and a Shannon election last year. She didn't run in any of those, and she was late declaring running for the presidency here.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, so was it more about winning then? The block off wasn't about we're blocking off someone because we don't like her views. Is it we're blocking off a threat? Why would you consider somebody else against your candidate?
I think there was a bit of both. I mean, I think there was feedback that there was some people with very extreme views floating their names earlier on in the summer and into the autumn. And maybe I think that put off a lot of councillors from going down that route. Certainly, I was talking to some councillors in the country who were going, look, I'm not supporting anybody. There was a bit of buyer's remorse from last time in terms of people nominating people who maybe they didn't quiz enough, they didn't know enough about them. And that ultimately they got a bit of a backlash on that. And then from the political parties perspective, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael just decided, well, look, we're running our candidate and we're not allowing anybody else into the field here who might take votes from our candidate. So, if Maria Steen had been in the race, whatever about her prospects, you know, she was more likely to take votes from Heather Humphreys and Jim Gavin, given the demographics of the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael support
base.
Then Catherine Connolly. And maybe it would also have helped Catherine Connolly because she would have been able to say, well, look, I'm a Liberal. There is a Conservative running here. You have to vote for me in order to keep her out. So maybe all told, it would have been Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael who would not have benefited from having Maria Steen in this presidential election race. Yeah. And also, if that isn't something else here, I know you've got Jim Gavin on and you've just had Heather Humphreys on. You wouldn't say that either of them now are the most spectacular debaters. Just leave that one there now. I think you had a good interview there with Heather. I think the issue with Heather Humphreys is very often how relaxed she is going into an interview. You saw that she was very colloquial, she was very casual in terms of a conversation there. I think you got a good interview out of her as a result. But the other Heather that we've encountered over the years is somebody who's very nervous, very, very cautious in terms of her presentation inside in live interviews, and she probably doesn't put herself across terribly well. And in Jim Gavin's case, thus far, we have yet to see that great articulacy that we've been told is locked away in there.
Okay.
Maybe you'll get it out of him.
Yeah. Maybe I will. And we'll see more on the live debate on Monday night. But if your point is, if Maria Steen was part of those debates, then there'd be an issue for all candidates because she's a very strong debater on past performance.
She showed during last year's referendum, she did do very well against Micheál Martin, who's a fairly experienced and wily campaigner. And certainly during the abortion referendum, I recall a live TV debate that she was on. Professor Peter De Boyle, the obstetrician who was campaigning for Repeal the Eighth, he went down a route where he made a claim, and boy, did he regret it, because she really pinned him down. The barrister in her came out, and she picked up on him, and it was actually Mary Lou MacDonald, the Sinn Féin leader, who had to kind of step in and rescue him because she really had him on the ropes. So if you were putting something like that into this race where you've got three people who have thus far have struggled with their communications, either saying too much or saying too little, one or the other, then I think that would have added a new dynamic altogether.
Okay, all right, Fionnán, stay on the line. We're going to talk more. We'll talk about the budget and other issues which are bubbling away in the background as well. We'll get to those after we take these.
Call from the Dáil on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Yeah, we have Ireland editor at the Irish Independent, Fionnán Sheehan, with us sitting in for John this week. And Fionnán, the budget, we might forget about it because of the presidential election and all that's going on with that, but it's serious stuff, and there's some serious warnings being dished out by everybody. The Central Bank, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Committee, and yesterday then the ESRI saying you're spending far too much at the wrong time. Rein it in, Pascal and Jack. Will they listen?
Yeah, so, I mean, when you even have left-wing union-based think tanks criticising the government for the amount of money that has been spent here, you know that there is an issue. As you say, you've got all of this array of economic expertise across the country saying that there's just too much money being spent, that this budget is just too big, that they're not broadening the tax base enough, that they're not reining in spending enough. What they are welcoming, I suppose, is that there's more money going into infrastructure, that's fine, but that there's a related issue there about having the labour available for it. There's question marks about waste, about value for money, and also just a failure to control the public purse at this point in time. And given that they're talking about a $9.5 billion worth of a budget, there's no sign that the government is in any way going to put the brakes on here, because the argument is, even those economists are openly admitting, there is a good strong economy brewing here even next year when things are going to slow down, but slow down in terms of not being at the same pace it is at the moment. It's still going to be growing more than most European countries. So the coffers are continuing to swell, the money continues to roll in from the corporation tax in terms of the tech sector, in terms of the pharmaceutical sector, despite the Trump tariffs, despite having to increase the corporation tax this past year up to 15% for larger corporations and companies, in spite of global instability, we're still flying in that regard. Everything on that side of the balance sheet is still going well. But over on the other side, we are seeing now that, kind of similar to the Celtic Tiger days, spending is getting out of control. We're going to be $3 billion over at the very least this year. And it's not just the old traditional thing of the Department of Health running over budget. It's across education, it's across justice, it's across children, Norman Foley's department as well. And the Department of Public Expenditure, the Minister of Public Expenditure, Jack Chambers, they're not really showing any sign that they are getting a handle on this. So I suppose that's the concern as well. It's not just that this is such a big budget. It's that, well, what you announce on the budget is one thing, but what you end up with 12 months later is even bigger than that. And those are the warnings that have been put forward. Now, at the same time, the point has been made, this is a bit like 2008 and the bursting of the Celtic Tiger bubble. It is, but it isn't, because the banking sector is not as dramatically exposed as it was. Ultimately, that was a banking crash to begin with, which precipitated an economic crash. And also the level of personal indebtedness that there is across the country isn't the same. And also, you'd have to say that the supply of housing, even if there was to be a housing crash to a degree, and there was suddenly to be housing available, we still wouldn't be meeting the enormous amounts of pent-up demand. So it is, you know, while you can say there's echoes of 2008 in terms of the economic management, it's also a very different climate. So what we are seeing in terms of, from Pascal Donoghue and Jack Chambers, that they are saying things like, look, we're very conscious of the need to keep control of public spending. We'll be implementing certain measures there. We're conscious of the infrastructure gaps in terms of water and power and upgrades to other projects around the country. And that's why we're putting more money in there. And they're also saying that the one-off cost of living measures that were conducted over the last couple of years will not be happening again for a couple of years, for a couple of reasons. One is because they are so expensive, and the other is that they are saying, look, the cost of living crisis as it was over recent years is not going to be as bad in the next 12 months, that things are moderating. Now tell that to somebody who's going to under shopping this weekend.
Yeah. But
the predictions
Give me one answer, a short answer to this. If they don't pull in the reins now in the life cycle of a government, they're not going to pull it in the closer to get to the next election, are they? So no, do you believe them when they say that?
That's why we want to see a plan. They're being told they have to outline a spending plan in this budget that gives some form of indication that they're going to get things under control over the lifetime of the government, because we don't have that at the moment. I mean, they're literally going year to year, and those year to year estimates are in no way accurate. So there is pressure being brought to bear on them to show, yes, we do actually have a plan over the course of the 5 years.
We'll see how prudent they'll be when it comes to Fionnuala. Thanks a million as always. That's Fionnuala Sheehan there, and Cathal na Dáil. If you have a view on what he had to say, get in touch. On the way, we'll be hearing from Jim Gavin.